Most actors dread auditions where they have only a few minutes to prove themselves to the casting director. My guest Joanna Merlin has been on both sides of the process. For 25 years, she was a casting director for Broadway and film. As Harold Prince's casting director, she worked on the original Broadway productions of Follies, A Little Night Music, Sweeney Todd, Pacific Overtures, and Evita. She also cast Bernardo Bertolucci's epic movie, The Last Emperor. As an actress, she's appeared in the original Broadway production of Fiddler on the Roof and the films Class Action, Mystic Pizza, The Killing Fields, and The Ten Commandments. She co-founded the Nontraditional Casting Project and now teaches in the graduate acting program of New York University. She's written a new book called Auditioning, An Actor-Friendly Guide. I asked Joanna Merlin how she became a casting agent.
Well, oddly enough, I had never thought about being a casting person. I had two babies and thought, well, I don't want to go on the road. I'm not sure if I can act full time anymore. What will I do? And out of the blue, Hal Prince called me. I had met him when he was producing Fiddler on the Roof, which I had done a few years before. And he got this sort of crazy notion that because I was an actor and I was a Jewish mother and I would like actors and had been around New York for a while, that I might be a good casting director. And I thought it was an insane idea. But he had two babies the same age as mine. And he said, I don't care when you're there. I don't care what your hours are, as long as you get the work done. And I sort of went into it blindly and very naively because there were five shows going and there was a lot of work. But somehow or another, because he was so free about my when I was there, I managed it. And I really got an education, sort of learning on the job.
Now, you did the auditioning for Sweeney Todd, the Stephen Sondheim show?
Yes.
Did Angela Lansbury, who was one of the stars, have to audition?
No, she didn't. She did not, nor did Len Cariou. Len Cariou had worked for Steve and Hal before, and they knew his work. I mean, if they know an actor's work and they feel that this actor can play this character and they don't have doubts about it, and if they know that the vocal range is okay. Now, for Angela, you know, I don't know this for a fact, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if Steve might have written some of the songs within Angela's range. And that happens when you start with a star. And frequently, producers and directors will get a star before the whole show is written, and they will write around them.
And what did you ask the other performers in Sweeney Todd to do for auditions?
Well, Sweeney Todd required great voices. And so everyone had to sing very, very well. Also, we were looking for interesting character types. The Beatle had to be we wanted him to be a very large man. And the part of Tobias was to be someone a little bit eccentric looking and strange. And a lot of the people in the chorus needed to be kind of interesting types. So each show really presents a different challenge, and it's one of the things that makes it so interesting.
What are some of the traps in auditioning you'd caution people to not fall into?
Actors tend to overcomplicate the material when it's certainly not required. Also, they frequently don't listen to the reader. Very common mistake. They're focusing only on their own lines. Sometimes they tend to speed through the audition. Fast audition is a good audition, but it isn't necessarily. And I think the most common mistake is trying to be a blank slate, trying to second-guess the director, going in, giving a sort of straight, intelligent reading without making a strong choice. And actors must come in and make strong choices because directors want to feel that they can collaborate with them. They don't want to feel that the actor is totally dependent on the director.
I've interviewed several actors over the years who believe that they got certain parts through sheer chutzpah, through doing something very outrageous at the audition or dressing outrageously or even showing up at the director's home and refusing to go away until the director promised to hear them audition. How wise is that? I mean, do you know people who actually got their parts through that kind of brazen act?
Well, I think that as a rule, it's a little risky because casting directors don't like you to go over their heads. Just it reminded me of one thing that happened when I was casting Sweeney Todd. This young woman whom I didn't know wanted an audition. And it's always difficult to know how many people to bring in that you don't know because there's a limited amount of time. In any event, one day at the office, there arrived a box with a pie in it, with a plastic arm and hand sticking out of the pie. And, of course, the show is about the demon barber of Fleet Street who kills people in his barber chair and then grinds them up and so on. And I thought, well, you know, this is pretty inventive. And I did give her an audition. She didn't get the part. But you really have to make a decision on the basis of talent. And no matter what an actor does, to sort of twist your arm, that ultimately the decision is going to be because that is a good actor for the role.
Actors' agents are always trying to get casting directors to see their actors. What are some of the things agents have done to inspire you to see their people? Little gifts maybe they give or whatever. And what are the ethics of that?
Well, I think ordinarily one doesn't accept gifts. I remember, though, when I was casting A Little Night Music, Eric Shepard at ICM had asked me if we would see Hermione Gingold for the role of Madame Armfeldt. And she was very, very different than Hal Prince's concept of this role. And she had read the script and wanted to audition, and her agent called several times, but Hal's concept was totally different. And I set up the appointment anyway and took a chance. And, of course, she came in and blew everybody away. But it was because of her persistence, really, that we saw her. And the same thing happened, actually, with Mandy Patinkin. You know, for Evita, his agent wanted him to audition for the part of Che Guevara, but nobody had ever heard him sing. And it was just on the final day, Hal called me in the morning and said, I looked at the list. I don't think we have enough really good people for Che Guevara. Call somebody else in. So I sort of tracked him down that morning. He came in, read the material, cold, sang this incredible song, High Flying Adored, without ever having seen it before. And Tim Rice, who was the composer they had had Evita playing for a year in England, said, "This was the best I have ever heard that song sung." And, of course, he got the part.
My guest is Joanna Merlin. Her new book is a guide for actors called Auditioning. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Joanna Merlin, author of the new book Auditioning. She's Hal Prince's former casting director, and she cast the Bernardo Bertolucci movie The Last Emperor. I asked her about casting The Last Emperor in China.
The problem was that we needed actors who spoke English, and there aren't a lot of actors in China who speak English, at least at that time, which was 1984. Things have changed a lot since then. And I did some in New York, some in L.A., San Francisco, Hong Kong, Taiwan. But the auditioning in China was really interesting because they have companies there. They have film companies, theater companies. So the actors don't audition. And every morning at 9 o'clock, I would open the door to my hotel room, and there would be about 20 Chinese actors, none of whom really spoke English, and they would all come in my room for the day, and they would all smoke. So by the end of the day, you could barely make your way through the haze, and I would go around to each one of them to see if they could say a few words in English, and then sometimes tape something for them, and then they would try to learn it and come back. But they all had a wonderful time because it was sort of a new experience.
Did you cast the leads in The Last Emperor, too?
I did. As a matter of fact, when I met Bertolucci, I had already done a lot of Asian casting. And in those years, there were not many Asians who were in the profession. The first time I cast them was in Sondheim's Pacific Overtures. And that took me a year to find a full cast. So Bernardo said he was looking for the emperor, Puyi, and the empress. And he wanted them to look like the pictures of the real people. And I said to him, there's only one person that I know in the world who can play the emperor, and that's John Lone. And the only other woman I know who could play the empress is Joan Chen. And I said, I'll be happy to, you know, do a search, but that's my feeling. And they did end up playing the parts because, and they were wonderful. They were wonderful. I think he chose them because they were wonderful, so that I didn't have to do a huge search.
You said that when Hal Prince made you his casting director, totally surprising you, that part of what he was looking for was somebody who was a Jewish mother, which you were. Why should that be a qualification for a casting director?
Well, I think that actors respond to casting directors who are supportive and encouraging. And that if they feel that the moment they walk in the room they're being challenged, then it's a turnoff. And there are some people who are in casting who are not supportive and who can be somewhat abusive, although I think most casting directors try to conduct themselves with understanding and some graciousness. But it's very helpful to an actor if they feel that you're on their side. And indeed, casting directors are rooting for you. I mean, they want to cast the role. And so they're rooting for every actor that walks in the door, as are directors.
You have an interesting audition story yourself about the time you auditioned to play one of the daughters in the original Broadway production of Fiddler on the Roof. Tell us about the audition and the role you were initially going after.
Well, I had met Jerry Robbins, who was the director, when I was auditioning for him for Mother Courage, which he did on Broadway. And he'd brought me in four times and then didn't cast me. So when he was doing Fiddler, he remembered me and called me in for the part of Huddle. And I'm not really a singer, but he sort of had it in his mind that I could play this role. And it was in a soprano voice. And I came in time and time again. He kept bringing me in. I couldn't understand why, but he had this idée fixe that he needed me in the show. And finally, he had me work with Sheldon and Jerry, who had written the score, the lyricist, the composer, and to learn the song and work on it. And I came back and I sang it. It was still terrible. And so he said, this was the seventh audition, he said, would you mind if I came to your voice lesson with you and heard all the songs you sing? And I nearly fell off the stage, but he did. And I'll never forget, it was a rainy day, and we went to this Carmen Gagliardi's voice studio on West 71st Street, and there was Jerry Robbins tromping up on the elevator with me, and he had me sing all these songs and picked out a song that was in a different range. It was in my chest voice, which was still not great, but it was better. And so he said, that's what you have to sing for the next audition. So there it was, the eighth audition. I sang the song, and Jerry and Sheldon stood up in the audience and said, she's got a chest voice. She can play Seidel. So I got the part.
Seidel's the other daughter.
Seidel is the older daughter who marries Muddle the Tailor, and she doesn't sing very much. And they kind of wrote a section of Matchmaker that had a range of about four tones that I could manage.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you, Terry. It's been a pleasure.
Joanna Merlin's new book is a guide for actors called Auditioning. She teaches at the NYU Graduate Acting Program.